I'll be but a moment.
I don't want to see your butt.
You're gonna.
I don't want to.
You already have.
I know, and I wasn't happy about it the first time. Different dads have podcasting. Our apologies. We are told that last episode, the network did not appreciate our uncompromising game of Red Rover. I said, I'm sorry, Mama. I never meant to hurt Jews. I never meant to make Jews cry, but now going back to the closet. I said, I'm sorry, Mama. Yeah, you can just start talking. Just all tell right. me things.
Yeah. Tell me what you remember about Bacon's Rebellion.
Nothing. Blank okay. slate.
Love it. Okay, that's great, because my segment isn't very detailed, and there are other podcasts I can direct you to that have a more deep dive. I feel like instead of doing deep dives, I do belly flops.
You gotta leave that in there.
For more of a deep dive on Bacon's Rebellion, tune into Stuff You Missed in History Class or Iroquois History. But don't go to the website Bacon's Rebellion for history, because that is an alt-right website.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
This story is complex beyond my ability to sum up in 15 minutes and nuanced beyond my understanding. Just be aware that the full story isn't being told by me and wasn't being told by any of the history books that I read about it either.
Great. They usually don't.
Yeah, right?
It's something I've noticed about history books. The older I get, the more I realize how much has been omitted.
That's the other thing that I think is important about this story for us to talk about, is how it came to be that only parts of it are told and why that is. You know, how it is that history is distorted over time. And
colonialism.
I'm glad you bring that up, because
I always do.
This story takes place in 1670, so it is, it's colonial.
Colonialism, the musical. Colonization, the musical.
This is a story from the era of colonization that highlights just some of the key forces that shaped America and continue to shape it today.
Wow.
And
What a fucking intro.
Let's start with who the crap Nathaniel Bacon was.
Who is the crap?
Nathaniel Bacon was an aristocrat with the same name as his father. He made a very bad name for himself in Britain by trying to steal a neighbor's inheritance, racking up debt, and marrying a woman without her father's consent.
Oh, wow. What a rabble-rouser. Rapscallion, indeed. Any relation to Kevin?
just based on everything based that on I said. Kevin Bacon. I thought you meant our friend.
You thought of it, Kevin Jansen?
Yes.
This one's dedicated to Kevin Jansen.
This is for the real one, Kevin Jansen.
This one goes out to a real one who has not listened to this, probably never will. This is for him.
Yeah. Nathaniel Bacon's father, Nathaniel Bacon, sent him to Virginia to get straightened out by his cousin by marriage, Lord Berkeley. What followed was a family squabble that left hundreds dead and a city burned to the ground.
Oh my God. Can only picture the reunion t-shirts.
Okay, let's dive in. First and foremost in this story is the relationship between colonists and Native Americans.
Not great.
In the
spoiler alert, problematic.
Yeah. In the 1670s, Berkeley, the governor of Virginia, was careful to negotiate with each tribe or nation as individually as possible, while the colonists that he ruled tended to see all Native American people as one group standing between them and their misguided notion of land ownership. Yep.
Sighs at length.
Yes. And it's this this tension that sort of sparks the fire that burns Jamestown to the ground. Berkeley's decision to recognize the sovereignty of each Native nation was not motivated by care or consideration. Instead, he was being careful to form alliances that would divide Native populations for fear that they might all unite against the colonists. The differences in approach by Berkeley and the colonists he governed was one factor that made treaties and trade agreements tenuous, often being violated by colonists who suffered mild consequences, if any, from the government for their errors. So one of these colonists was Thomas Matthews, who continuously broke his agreements with the Doag people, one of the Algonquin-speaking nations. Frustrated Doags attempted to settle the debt by raiding Matthews' cattle. One of Matthews' servants attacked the raiders, killing two men before succumbing to his own wounds and dying as well. The result of these was a series of escalating back and forth retaliations between the colonial militia and the Doag people. The colonial militia pursued Doag hunters across the river into Maryland and massacred 14 members of an unrelated tribe, the Iroquois-speaking Susquehanna.
I think the whole time, all of my responses to all of this are just going to be weighted exhalations.
Yes, this story is depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you'll see is this pattern of the wrong people being killed in a skirmish doesn't end here. This is just...
It still has not. It continues to this very day.
I'm just going to take a drink and then we'll get back into it.
Yeah, I will forever maintain that the need for dominion is the root of all of human evil.
When you say dominion, do you mean control over our environment or perceived control over?
Dominion over anything, over the environment, over other beings, over other humans. Just the need to be above something or someone. Mm. Yeah. Pretty gross.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Put me down as against.
I agree with your assessment. I feel as though this conflict, it revealed to me how people trying to maintain or increase their power or wealth intentionally drove divisions between people and further subjected others in a way that we still today are feeling the effects of.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And continues.
You're already digging into the like intellectual mixture that this story inspired for me. So I'll continue reading it.
Like this.
I can continue reading it, or we can just get into the meta-analysis.
I woke up like this in an existential crisis.
Yeah.
No. Please continue.
Okay. So
I don't need to be spiraling. It's 11 a.m.
All right. Well, here we go. We're going to get deeper into it. The Susquehanna held an alliance with Lord Berkeley, but could not allow this massacre to go unanswered. So they killed two colonists. Some claim two of the colonists involved in killing 14 members of their nation. It's unclear. We are 400 years out.
The forensics is still out.
Yeah. So
fingerprints have not come back from analysis.
So the Susquehanna killed two colonists. They raided farmland, and then they reached out to Lord Berkeley to make peace and renegotiate their trade and peace agreements. During the negotiations, the colonial militia continued to fight and laid siege to a Susquehanna fort. When the Susquehanna surrendered, they were murdered by none other than John Washington, George Washington's great-grandfather.
Rude.
Obviously, this second massacre led to escalating conflict between the colonists and the Susquehanna. Onto this shit show stage steps none other than Nathaniel Bacon II.
Here he is.
Here he is. Bacon had been told by Lord Berkeley that he was not allowed to lead any colonial militia. Berkeley was aware of Bacon's attitudes towards all Native Americans and was too busy putting out the fires of other colonists to worry about his own cousin exacerbating the conflict.
There's always one guy at the party.
Yep. Bacon formed a militia anyway, made primarily of settlers and indentured servants. And this is where I'm going to take a moment to have an aside about class and race in colonial Virginia.
Oh, God. This sounds like a long aside. Sounds like a massive aside.
It's huge, but I'm going to try and be brief. So,
best of luck.
Thanks. In terms of class, it's important to note that the aristocrats lived near the coast where they were sheltered from the consequences of their conflict with Native nations by the poor who were granted the land to the west.
Granted is quite the term.
It is. Well, okay. So,
a gift for you. You, my human wall.
I mean, Virginia was a company in addition to being a colony. So their product was tobacco. Almost 98% of what they did was grow tobacco that had come from the Caribbean. It's sweeter. So Europeans are like, oh, oh, oh. And Virginia's like, wow, this is great, but we need more labor, but we can't afford more labor. So what if we create indentured servitude and promise people land at the end of their service? The land that they granted was always to the west on land that they had acquired through bloody murder. So this was kind of the system. While we're in this, another thing to note is that some of the indentured servants in Virginia were Native Americans who had been captured by rival tribes. And so the Virginia Company was also trading guns for people with natives, wow, which escalated the conflict between Native nations as they...
Yeah, right. Yeah. That which all of that feeds into, and this is a big thing that we do not have time to get into, but all of that kind of feeds into this idea that you can't talk about race without talking about class, really, because class is in a lot of ways a much stronger divide. You know, like the wealthy class wants everyone in the impoverished class, regardless of race, to hate one another because then they'll forget who the real enemy is.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Let's put a pin in that exact sentiment because that's what attracted me to this story. And I want to get into it just a little bit later.
Okay.
I'm trying to get back into my notes because I went off script. Okay.
It's jazz time. We're riffing.
It's also important to say that at this point, most free labor was indentured servitude, not lifelong slavery, and involved people of European, African, and Native American descent. So Bacon led a coalition of poor, indentured, and enslaved people of African and European descent into an abhorrent offensive against all Native populations in the area.
Christ.
And... just to jump back into race very briefly, it's important to say that at this point in time, there wasn't a sense of whiteness. There were people of different European nations.
Right.
In terms of...
White people still hated other white people and we're still classifying other white people as others.
People of European descent, African descent, and Native Americans who had been indentured servants and then came to the end of their term of servitude, in the eyes of the law, were equals in terms of practice it didn't always turn out that way. However, back to the conflict. Okay. As the Susquehanna, a nation wrongly attacked and massacred twice by the colonists on their own damn land, continued to fight colonists, they sought the aid of other nearby nations. And Bacon was able to convince members of at least one other nation, I believe called the Okanichi, to pull a Trojan horse, pretending to flee colonists into the fort of the Susquehanna, and then attacking the Susquehanna from the inside. When they returned to Bacon with the news of their success, Bacon slaughtered them and then led his militia against their village.
What a piece of shit.
Yes, I agree.
Glad we have that on record. We're really going to taint this guy's reputation.
Well, you said taint. Okay. So, upon receiving news of Bacon's actions, Berkeley removed Bacon from his council and declared him an outlaw. Bacon responded by surrounding the government with his militia of 500 men.
Oh, God.
Berkeley came out and opened his shirt, baring his chest, daring Bacon to shoot him, which is like, you know, it's not the most toxic part of this story, but it is like,
it's up there.
It's a trope, right? It's like, oof.
It is a trope. That's very cliche of him.
Yeah, but he did it in 1670, so he might have been the first.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Or at least on record.
Right.
Shoot me!
Though Berkeley was not intimidated, the rest of the government was, and granted Bacon pardons for all of his crimes up to this point.
Wow.
And granted him the charge of an army, which he had wanted all along.
Yeah, that's exactly what you should give someone like that, everything they want.
And Bacon led that army to continue to massacre native nations that had previously been allies to the Virginia colony. While he was doing that, Berkeley used this time to rally his own set of forces and denounced Bacon a second time, which led to a series of armed conflicts between these two colonial militia, culminating in the burning of Jamestown, the capture and hanging of several of Bacon's men. Bacon, by the way, ended up dying of dysentery, not any like battle related, unless you consider dysentery battle related things. And it was at this point that Berkeley's forces overwhelmed the leaderless Bacon's militia and hanged several of his followers. Berkeley was called back to England, and the new forces of power, and this is where we pull out that pin.
Yes, race and class. And class being a stronger divide.
And those in power using any means they can to divide the lower classes so that they do not unite against.
Still holds up.
So.
Tried and true. 400 years.
So the aftermath of this rebellion led to the first race-based slavery laws in Virginia.
Oh, wow.
And they came explicitly for the means of dividing the lower classes so they
would
again unite against the aristocrats.
Right, which you can draw a direct line from that to our current prison industrial complex and the way it's legalized slavery and an institution and a system used to keep poor people poor.
Yes.
Yeah.
And while this is for you just another chorus in a long line of songs singing the injustices of America, to me, a few years ago when I read this, it was revelatory. So Ibram X. Kendi wrote a book called Stamped from the Beginning. mm-hmm. where he makes explicit the economic and politically motivated forces that created American racism. Mm-hmm. And it blew my mind. And to some, it's, you know, this is just like, oh yeah, power breeds division. But for me, this story highlighted it in a way that, I don't know, it just broke through my shell of ignorance, I guess.
Mm. It is an this is an interesting story in that you don't hear of, I mean, like the fact that they were pitting Native people against one another speaks really upsetting volumes to how much power these, you know, European assholes had at the time.
Yes.
And what they were doing with it just to get what they wanted.
Yes.
Which was just more land, more power, more money, more resources
than
they needed.
And
arguably.
Then in writing, explicitly wrote the choice to create racially based laws that would divide
right.
the lower classes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the putting it in writing aspect is pretty, because you can trace our actions of doing that back to white people first even showing up here, but from a legal standpoint, it didn't start there necessarily. So that is an interesting point.
I feel like I did my best with this one. It's extremely complex.
That's a lot to tackle. Well done.
Thank you.
And now it's time for the Tree of Ennui.
It is I, the Tree of Ennui, here to tell you about the travesty of the year 2020 and 2021. You see, I am not eligible for my vaccine despite providing oxygen to the atmosphere. Is that not essential work to you, humans? Many people have ridiculed me, the Tree of Ennui. They say to me, Tree of Ennui, what is this accent, huh? Do you think you are French? You are not French. No, I do not think I am French. I am a tree. I am above these national delineations. Do not assume all of us are ants. We are not ants. We will not carry you into battle. We are but mere wooden structures. Yearning to self-actualize. Each day I stretch closer and closer to the sun, but the sun is so far away I shall never reach it. This is the true meaning of suffering. I yearn for something I cannot have, much like all of us, no?
Thank you, Tree of Ennui. Thank you for that reminder that life is suffering. Now on to our next segment.
And now the obligatory Crisis Corner with Aunt Gilda.
And now the required listening, required reading, the Scholastic Book Fair. The most successful, the most attractive, probably one of the tallest people you've ever met in your life. Great collection of shoes, great collection of purses. Couldn't give fewer fucks. Aunt Gilda. That is me. I am here. Hello. Crisis is my brand. It's my name. It's who I am.
Aunt Gilda, I was thinking...
I don't think you should have any thoughts at all. You don't get to have thoughts. You get to have thoughts when you earn the right to have thoughts. I gave up my right to have thoughts a long time ago. I had a double lobotomy. That means I had one in the front, one in the rear. I had a fucking anal lobotomy. It's what happens when you get these things poked into your eyes, and then you don't have to think anymore. You're not polluted by thoughts. You're not weighed down by the weight of the world, worrying about what other people think of you. You're just going through life with a lobotomy. Look, if I'm in public, don't speak to me. Just don't try to talk to me. If I want to talk to you, I come over and I talk to you. If I'm just here, if I'm just minding my own business, if I'm drinking in a corner, if I have a cigarette holder and I'm just doing my own thing and burning my arm every so often by myself, leave me alone. I don't want to be a part of your events. I don't trust owls. Especially barn owls. They're all white and pure, thinking that they look like they're some sort of magical creature, fucking Mr. Tumnus bullshit, some fucking Gandalf bullshit. I'm not having it. You're not magical. You're going to die like the rest of us. And who? More like when? Why is what we should be asking. I don't have any fucking answers. Don't look at me like I got the answers. Just because I'm bankrolling your podcast doesn't mean I know what's going on or where I am at any given time. Not since the incident.
And Gilda, what happened to you?
That's an excellent question. What didn't happen to me, more like? You've been around the block a couple of times. Things happen. You get a double lobotomy, you fucking owl, you smoke a cigarette by yourself in the corner at a wedding. Who am I to say? When am I to say? I like that the contents of your nightstand are a personal massager and a garden gnome. Don't we have other segments? We must have other segments.
Yes.
Well, shall I?
Hell yeah.
So, let's just get this out of the way. I'm telling you about an animal again. I'm not going to quantify it. I'm not going to defend myself. I don't want to hear any back sass. This is just what happens sometimes. And we've all got to move the fuck on, Greg. Now that that's out of the way, I'll get right.
Carefully.
I did. I'll get right to the point. Do you know about Turritopsis dorni or dorni?
Can you give me the non-Latin name and I can give you...
It's a jellyfish. It's a very special jellyfish.
It's not the immortal jelly, is it?
It is the immortal jelly. Do you know about this? Cool.
Yep. Heard about it? Yep. Love them.
Lame. Well...
That's not lame. It's an awesome animal. Well, it is lame because
I'm just
going to
be telling you about something you already know, which is
lame. We'll be talking about something we both know a little bit about and you probably know more about than me.
All right, fine. Anyway.
Why be disappointed about this? This is a good...
It's more exciting. Anyway, whatever.
This is a good outcome. God. Re-energize yourself, damn it.
Turritopsis dorni, spelled Turritopsis space dorni, a biologically immortal jellyfish. The immortal jellyfish. As far as we know, the only living immortal creature on Earth. The only proven immortal creature on Earth. It's in the Hydrozoa class, meaning a small predatory saltwater animal. I have also been described by former lovers as small predatory and salty, so you can see what drew me here. Hydrozoans have two distinct life stages.
If you're going to make jokes like that, you need to pause so I can laugh at them.
Is that how comedy works? Am I supposed to let you laugh? I'm not supposed to let my imposter syndrome overtake me and assume no one's going to laugh at anything I've written.
Yeah. Just bulldoze.
Steamroll
over my appreciation of you because it's too uncomfortable to bear.
Story of my fucking life.
Yeah.
Okay. So they have two life stages, two distinct life stages. Polyp. Or P-O-L-Y-P.
Polyp.
Polyp. And Medusa. And it'd be off-brand if I didn't also make a joke here about turning men to stone. But we don't have that kind of time. We have to move on, Greg. Okay. These guys and gals are found in warmer waters. All over the world, as they tend to latch themselves to the bottoms of boats. These hitchhikers need to get a job. The adults can have up to 90 goddamn tentacles, which is horrifying. They were discovered by humans in the 1880s, but their superpowers weren't identified until the mid-1990s because humans are slow. So these guys eat mostly plankton. What's cool is that in perfect conditions, they are technically capable of living forever. What's lame is that they usually do not. The dorni is itty-bitty, as in barely visible, and easily killed by a variety of predators, sharks, turtles, penguins, anemones, tunas, even birds as a food source. In the polyp stage, the cells form colonies, while the medusa stage is a singular organism. So the polyp stage is the more juvenile of the two, whereas the medusa stage means the jelly has reached sexual maturity. The jelly gets an OnlyFans. So basically, even once the dorni has reached the older life stage, it can regress and transform back into its younger stage. So essentially, when they're in danger of dying due to injury or sickness, they can revert to their larva state. And then the warmer the water, the quicker the entire process, just like in forensics with the decaying of bodies. In lab environments, the maturation process takes less than 30 days, but it has yet to be observed in their natural habitats. We've actually never seen it in nature. So this ability to morph into a different type of cell is called transdifferentiation, or in more badass terms, lineage reprogramming, which is fucking cool as a concept.
Yep.
It's not uncommon in nature, such as with lizards and starfish that use the same tactic to regrow body parts. But these jellies can perform this throughout their entire body, which gives them the ability to change the cells themselves. For instance, it can change a muscle cell into a nerve cell, possibly as many times as it wants. Who the fuck does that? Humans jellyfish. Are trying to. Jellyfish do. Humans do not. But we're trying. We're learning because we're currently studying these guys and their microRNAs, or their genetic material that controls a gene found in cells. These are said to act as light switches in that when they're off, the cell isn't defined as anything. So human scientists are obviously using this to try to figure out how to apply the same transdifferentiation process to get cancer cells to identify as skin cells or nerve cells or just, I assume, literally anything non-cancerous. Knowing humans, we're probably also studying it as a way to stave off our all-encompassing fear of aging and death and as a way to make money off of others' fears of the same.
Yep.
That's what we do. We care about money. There are other types of jellyfish in this family, such as the Nutricula and the Rubra. And while they haven't been proven to be immortal as well, they also haven't been observed and or proven otherwise. So those are kind of agnostic jellies. For a long time, we thought that the Nutricula was in fact the Dornei, and it's often pictured as the Rubra, which made researching this very confusing. And some sources online threw me the fuck off by not having their shit together about all that. But neither do I, so who am I to judge? There's also the Hydra, which is unfortunately not the mythical creature, but a genus of small, freshwater, very phallic-looking organisms. They do not appear to die of natural causes or even age at all, which is pretty wild. So needless to say, those guys are being studied as well. And one day I would be curious to read more into adjacent categories, because they're also organisms that we've, like, there are these organisms that don't seem to age, then there are, you know, the ones that regenerate parts of their bodies, and then there are other organisms that we've revived into activity after periods of stasis, which is crazy, but that's for another day.
Looking at you, water bears.
Looking at you, tardigrades. Get in here. The tardigrade has entered the chat. I do want to conclude by saying that in 2011, a scientist named Shin Kubota from Kyoto University reported an impressive ability to sustain a group of T. Dornei in captivity for a prolonged period of time. Do you know about this guy? He reported that in a 2-year period, his colony rebirthed itself 11 motherfucking times in 2 years. So it, like, reached maturation and then went back to childhood and back and forth 11 fucking times. But don't listen to me. Listen to him, because this man has written several songs about jellyfish, and I'm going to play you one of them.
I'm ready.
It's the purest. Yeah, it's very pure. So start at the 26-second mark and then tell me when you're ready, and we'll both listen to this gem.
I think I'm ready. 3, 2, 1.
Boom.
僕の名前はベニクラゲ ちっちゃいクラゲです だけど僕には人にない 特別な秘密があるんだ 僕は若返ることができるんだ もうダメだと思ったらポリプに戻ってワンツースリー。
Okay, so that was endearing, but everyone clapping off rhythm to his song made me want to destroy everything.
That's not his fault. There are also other videos we could find. There are many videos of this man's.
Well,
you can use any of them. You can use literally any of them. I just wanted you to know that this was out there.
You froze in mid-defense of this man.
I love him.
I don't blame him for the people in the audience clapping off rhythm to his song. Yeah. I blame them.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Oh. Gross. Oh, yeah,
you froze.
Ladies and gentlemen, we were really excited. We thought we had booked Creedence Clearwater Revival, the one, the only. Turns out, we need to fire our publicist because all they got us was Creed.
I see a band I'll rise underordinary bound to lose your life. Everybody on the right.